Chapter 10. Drew. I stood by Richard of England at the gates of Ascalon, and drew the spear from sainted King Louis in the tents of Damietta, the individual addressed as Roman replied. L.A. Day. Since thy beard grew, boy, and merit is yet a thin one, I have broken a lance with Soliman at Rhodes, and smoked a chibok with Saladin at Acre. But enough of this. Tell me of home, of our native valley, of my hearth, and my lady mother, and my good chaplain. Tell me of her, Philibert, said the knight, executing a demi-volte, in order to hide his emotion. Philibert seemed uneasy, and to strive, as though he would parry the question. He castle stands on the rock, he said, and the swallows still build in the battlements. The good chaplain still chants his vespers at morn, and snuffles his matins at evensong. The lady mother still distributeth tracts, and knitteth Berlin linsey woolsey. The tenants pay no better, and the lawyers done as sorely, kinsman mine, he added with an arch look. But Fatima, Fatima, how fares she? Raman continued. Inslamas was a twelvemonth, I hear not of her, my letters are unanswered. The postman hath traversed our camp every day, and never brought me a billet. How is Fatima, Philibert de Coquelicot? She is well, Philibert replied. Her sister Anne is the fairest of the twain, though. Her sister Anne was a baby when I embarked for Egypt. A plague on sister Anne. Speak of Fatima, Philibert, my blue-eyed Fatima. I say she is well, answered his comrade gloomily. Is she dead? Is she ill? Hath she the measles? Nay, hath she had the smallpox, and lost her beauty? Speak, speak, boy, cried the knight, wrought to agony. Her cheek is as red as her mother's, though the old countess paints hers every day. Her foot is as light as a sparrow's, and her voice as sweet as a minstrel's dulcimer. But give me Nathless the Lady Anne, cried Philibert. Give me the peerless Lady Anne. As soon as ever I have won spurs, I will ride all Christendom through, and proclaim her the Queen of Beauty. Ho, Lady Anne! Lady Anne! And so saying, but evidently wishing to disguise some emotion, or conceal some tale his friend could ill brook, to hear the reckless damoiseau galloped wildly forward. But swift as was his courser's pace, that of his companion's enormous charger was swifter. Oi, said the elder, thou hast ill tidings. I know it by thy glance. Speak. Shall he who hath bearded grim death in a thousand fields shame to face truth from a friend? Speak, in the name of heaven and good Saint Bodible. Raman de Close Vougeot, will bear your tidings like a man. Fatima is well, answered Philibert once again. She hath had no measles. She lives and is still fair. Fair, eh, peerless fair. But what more, Philibert? Not false? By Saint Bodible, say not false, groaned the elder warrior. A month sin, Philibert replied, she married the Baron de Barbazer. With that scream which is so terrible in a strong man in agony, the brave knight Raman de Close Vougeot sank back at the words, and fell from his charger to the ground, a lifeless mass of steel. 2. Like many another fabric of feudal war and splendor, the once vast and magnificent castle of Barbazer is now a moss-grown ruin. The traveler of the present day, who wanders by the banks of the silvery Loire, and climbs the steep on which the magnificent edifice stood, can scarcely trace, among the shattered masses of ivy-covered masonry which lie among the lonely crags, even the skeleton of the proud and majestic palace stronghold of the barons of Barbazer. In the days of our tale its turrets and pinnacles rose as stately, and seemed, to the pride of sinful man, as strong as the eternal rocks on which they stood. The three mullets on a ghoul's wavy reversed, surmounted by the sinople couchant door, the well-known cognizance of the house, blazed in gorgeous heraldry on a hundred banners, surmounting as many towers. The long lines of battlemented walls spread down the mountain to the Loire, and were defended by thousands of steel-clad serving men. 400 knights and 6 times as many archers fought round the banner of Barbazer at Bouvins, Malplaquet, and Azincourt. for his services at Fontenoy against the English, the heroic Charles Martel appointed the 14th Baron hereditary Grand Bootjack of the Kingdom of France, and for wealth, and for splendor, and for skill and fame in war, Raoul, the 28th Baron, was in no wise inferior to his noble ancestors. That the Baron Raoul levied toll upon the river and mail upon the shore, that he now, and then ransomed a burgher, plundered a neighbor, or drew the fangs of a Jew, that he burned an enemy's castle with the wife and children within, these were points for which the country knew and respected the stout Baron. When he returned from victory, he was sure to endow the church with a part of his spoil, so that when he went forth to battle he was always accompanied by her blessing. Thus lived the Baron Raoul, the pride of the country in which he dwelt, an ornament to the court, the church, and his neighbors. But in the midst of all his power and splendor there was a domestic grief which deeply afflicted the princely Barbazer. His lovely ladies died one after the other. No sooner was he married than he was a widower. In the course of 18 years, no less than 9 bereavements had befallen the chieftain. So true it is, that if fortune is a parasite, grief is a republican, and visits the hall of the great and wealthy as it does the humbler tenements of the poor. Leave off deploring thy faithless, gadabout lover, said the lady of Jacobic to her daughter, the lovely Fatima, and think how the noble Barbazer loves thee. Of all the damsels at the ball last night, he had eyes for thee, and thy cousin only. I am sure my cousin hath no good looks to be proud of. The admirable Fatima exclaimed, bridling up. Ah, that I care for my lord of Barbazer's looks. My heart, dearest mother, is with him who is far away. He danced with the 4 galliards, 9 quadrilles, and 23 carantos, I think, child, the mother said, eluding her daughter's remark. 25, said lovely Fatima, casting her beautiful eyes to the ground. Aho! But Rahman danced them very well. He had not the court air, the mother suggested. I don't wish to deny the beauty of the Lord of Berbazar's dancing, Mama, Fatima replied. Or a short, lusty man, 'tis wondrous how active he is, and in dignity the king's grace himself could not surpass him. You were the noblest couple in the room, love, the lady cried. That pea-green doublet, slashed with orange tawny, those ostrich plumes, blue, red, and yellow, those party-colored hose and pink shoon, became the noble Baron wondrous well, Fatima acknowledged. It must be confessed that, though middle-aged, he hath all the agility of youth. But alas, madam, the noble Baron hath had 9 wives already. And your cousin would give her eyes to become the 10th, the mother replied. My cousin give her eyes, Fatima exclaimed. Tease not much, I'm sure, for she squints abominably. And thus the ladies prattled, as they rode home at night after the great ball at the house of the Baron of Barbazer. The gentle reader, who has overheard their talk, will understand the doubts which pervaded the mind of the lovely Fatima, and the well-nurtured English maiden will participate in the divided feelings which rent her bosom. 'Tis true, that on his departure for the holy wars, Rahman and Fatima were plighted to each other. But the folly of long engagements is proverbial, and though for many months the faithful and affectionate girl had looked in vain for news from him, her admirable parents had long spoken with repugnance of a match which must bring inevitable poverty to both parties. They had suffered, 'tis true, the engagement to subside, hostile as they ever were to it. But when on the death of the 9th lady of Barbazer, the noble Baron remarked Fatima at the funeral, and rode home with her after the ceremony, her prudent parents saw how much wiser, better, happier for their child it would be, to have for life a partner like the Baron, than to wait the doubtful return of the penniless wanderer to whom she was plighted. Ah, how beautiful and pure a being! How regardless of self! How true to duty, how obedient to parental command, is that earthly angel, a well-bred woman of genteel family. instead of indulging in splenetic refusals or vain regrets for her absent lover, the exemplary Fatima at once signified to her excellent parents her willingness to obey their orders. Though she had sorrows and she declared them to be tremendous, the admirable being disguised them so well that none knew they oppressed her. She said she would try to forget former ties, and so strong in her mind was duty above every other feeling, so strong may it be in every British maiden. The lovely girl kept her promise. Why former engagements, she said, packing up Rahman's letters and presents, which, as the good knight was mortal poor, were in sooth of no great price, why former engagements I look upon as childish follies. My affections are fixed, where my dear parents graft them on the noble, the princely, the polite Barbazar. 'Tis true he is not comely in feature, but the chaste and well-bred female knows how to despise the fleeting charms of form. 'Tis true he is old, but can woman be better employed than in tending her aged and sickly companion? That he has been married is likewise certain, but ah, my mother, who knows not that he must be a good and tender husband, who, nine times wedded, owns that he cannot be happy without another partner. It was with these admirable sentiments the lovely Fatima proposed obedience to her parents' will, and consented to receive the magnificent marriage gift presented to her by her gallant bridegroom. 3. The old Countess of Chakabik had made a score of vain attempts to see her hapless daughter. Ever, when she came, the porters grinned at her savagely through the grating of the portcullis of the vast embattled gate of the castle of Barbazar, and rudely bade her beckon. He lady of Barbazar sees nobody but her confessor, and keeps her chamber, was the invariable reply of the dogged functionaries to the entreaties of the agonized mother. And at length, so furious was he at her perpetual calls at his gate, that the angry lord of Barbazar himself, who chanced to be at the postern, armed a crossbow, and let fly an arblast at the crupper of the lady's palfrey, whereon she fled finally, screaming, and in terror. "We'll aim at the rider next time," howled the ferocious baron, "and not at the horse." And those who knew his savage nature, and his unrivaled skill as a bowman, knew that he would neither break his knightly promise nor miss his aim. Since the fatal day, when the Grand Duke of Burgundy gave his famous passage of arms at Nantes, and all the nobles of France were present at the joustings, it was remarked that the Barbazar's heart was changed towards his gentle and virtuous lady. For the three first days of that famous festival, the redoubted Baron of Barbazar had kept the field against all the knights who entered. His lance bore everything down before it. The most famous champions of Europe, assembled at these joustings, had dropped, one by one, before this tremendous warrior. The prize of the tourney was destined to be his, and he was to be proclaimed bravest of the brave, as his lady was the fairest of the fair. On the third day, however, as the sun was declining over the Vosges, and the shadows were lengthening over the plain, where the warrior had obtained such triumphs, after having overcome 213 knights of different nations, including the fiery Dunois, the intrepid Walter Manny, the spotless Bayard, and the undaunted Duke Wesselin, as the conqueror sat still erect on his charger, and the multitudes doubted whether ever another champion could be found to face him, three blasts of a trumpet were heard, faint at first, but at every moment ringing more clearly, until a knight in pink armor rode into the lists with his visor down, and riding a tremendous dun charger, which he managed to the admiration of all present. The heralds asked him his name and quality. "Call me," said he, in a hollow voice, "the jilted knight." What was it made the lady of Barbazar tremble at his accents? The knight refused to tell his name and qualities, but the companion who rode with him, the young and noble Philibert de Coquelicot, who was known and respected universally through the neighborhood, gave a warranty for the birth and noble degree of the jilted knight and Raoul de Barbazar, yelling hoarsely for a 214th lance, shook the huge weapon in the air, as though it were a reed, and prepared to encounter the intruder. According to the wont of chivalry, and to keep the point of the spear from harm, the top of the unknown knight's lance was shielded with a bung, which the warrior removed, and galloping up to Barbazar's pavilion, over which his shield hung, touched that noble cognizance with the sharpened steel. A thrill of excitement ran through the assembly at this daring challenge to a combat alloutrance. As thou confessed, Sir Knight, roared the Barbazar, take thy ground, and look to thyself, for by heaven thy last hour is come. Poor youth, sighed the spectators, he has called down his own fate. The next minute the signal was given, and as the simum across the desert, the cataract down the rock, the shell from the howitzer, each warrior rushed from his goal. Thou wilt not slay so good a champion? Said the Grand Duke, as at the end of that terrific combat the knight in rose armor stood over his prostrate foe, whose helmet had rolled off when he was at length unhorsed, and whose bloodshot eyes glared unutterable hate and ferocity on his conqueror. Take thy life, said he who had styled himself the jilted knight, thou hast taken all that was dear to me. And the sun setting, and no other warrior appearing, to do battle against him, he was proclaimed the conqueror, and rode up to the Duchess's balcony, to receive the gold chain which was the reward of the victor. He raised his visor as the smiling Princess Gerdendim raised it, and gave one sad look towards the Lady Fatima at her side. Raman de Close Vaugiat, shrieked she, and fainted. The Baron of Barbazar heard the name as he writhed on the ground with his wound, and by his slighted honor, by his broken ribs, by his roused fury, he swore revenge, and the Lady Fatima, who had come to the tourney as a queen, returned to her castle as a prisoner. As it is impossible to give the whole of this remarkable novel, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.